Section 8 is very, very long for a couple reasons. One, this manual covers the climbing and the COPE program. Big difference between the two is with COPE, our anchor systems are installed, they're physical anchors, and we keep using them and reusing them. We don't have to do anything with them except ensure that there's nothing wrong with them before we use them. And they're inspected on an annual basis also. Those things don't wear out. They've been out there for since 2002, exposed to the weather. And if you're interested, I'd be more than happy to facilitate you going up and getting a close look at them. But they're in great shape. Wait a minute, I take the pulley on the flying squirrel was replaced about 3, 4 years ago. They're stainless steel. They're designed to be out in the weather. Basically, a life system is that set of stuff that is going to protect you. And in COPE and climbing, it's pretty simple. They're your harnesses, they're your helmets, they're your belay devices. And then also whatever it is that is allowing that rope to be above, to go through something above you. It's actually pretty simple. It gets complicated when you start thinking of all the variety of different things. And the climbing community has got tons and tons of different ways of doing something. In the COPE, we try and keep it very simple. On page 63, personal safety system. System of equipment, all right, stuff, connecting to an anchor point. Okay, that's the what's above you. And it's going to keep you from falling. It's going to keep you from free falling more than 2 feet. Because more than 2 feet, you're picking up momentum, and when you come to a stop, it's going to hurt. So 2 feet, you'll bounce a bit, but you're not going to be flexing your body so much that it could cause deep injury. So keep that in mind when you're tethered into something, and a tether is a short piece of sturdy rope or webbing that's going to connect you into a whatever it is that you're standing on top of. Like on the zip line, you've got a platform, you're going to be tethered into the pole. So in the event that you slipped, you would not fall off the pole and you would not fall very far. Do some of you remember about a year ago? The story of a woman who was celebrating her birthday and went out to one of the ropes courses in the Delaware area. She was standing on the zip line platform and stepped off. She had forgotten to tether herself in.
Wow.
So we're going to be following, when we're operating the zip line, we're going to be following step-by-step procedures in a way where that would not happen. And that's one of the reasons is we run the zip line in a totally different way than you would participated on one of the ropes courses in the area. The purpose of our program is not fun on ropes. The fun on ropes is a byproduct of the training that we're going to be doing. So, life systems. The personal safety keeps you from falling. Belay system is a mechanism that will allow you to descend in a controlled manner. The belayer is the person controlling that descent. In Boy Scouts, every climber is top roped. Now, what about rappelling? If any of you've seen videos of Bridge Day, the New River Gorge has this bridge that is, what, 800 feet above the river. One day of year, they close off the bridge to traffic, and rappellers who have demonstrated competency are allowed to rappel that entire distance down to the river. There's members of the Delmarva Climbing Committee who do that regularly. It's pretty scary. In Boy Scouts, when we're rappelling, when we're zipping down the line, we are still top rope. There is a belayer that is making sure that the descent is controlled. So those are the personal safety system, life system, personal safety system, belaying, and rappelling. Now let's talk about gear. Harnesses. It's a waist band, leg band. They're padded. If you're going to purchase them, padding is definitely nice. For ours, we generally don't have padding. The participants aren't going to be under pressure with those harnesses for very long, for more than just a couple minutes. So we buy them for sturdiness and ease of cleaning. Unfortunately, the pictures that we have in the belay manual do not demonstrate clearly the proper way of clipping in. So we'll have to show that. The harnesses that we've got have a belay loop that you clip the carabiner into when being belayed or belaying. We don't have a different way of connecting when we're tying in. Other personal harnesses do. So if someone comes out and wants to use their personal harness, make absolutely sure you know how they need to be connected when they're using that. On page 65, I'm
I would
sorry.
like to make a comment on that, Tony.
Oh, go ahead.
One thing. While it is, participants can use their personal equipment. This is what you taught me on the tower when we were doing the tower. The director, COPE level 2, is the final arbitrator. If you're not comfortable with their equipment, you don't understand how it works. It doesn't matter how well they understand it. If you don't understand it, don't use it.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing that up, Larry. You're absolutely right. And why would this be? Why does it matter that you need to know how it operates?
You are responsible for the safety of every participant. If you need to do something, if they're aloft and you need to do something, you have to understand how their equipment works.
Good. Thank you. You're absolutely right. We've got different types of harnesses, by the way. Like on page 65, it's showing how to double back a connector. Not all of our harnesses require double backing or can support double backing. If you look at the harness, it'll be clear. Now, we've been criticized for having multiple types. I prefer to have multiple types so that you get the experience, as well as making it so that you're continually mindfully aware of what harness they had on, is it proper, and not making an assumption. It's very easy to scan through a group that's supposed to be all the same and think you saw a connection correct. Now on 65, it talks about fitting, waist belt, leg loop, harnesses. There's lots of rules of thumb. Again, what I prefer is hold that harness below your ribs, above your hips, and then tighten it to where it's snug. It's putting pressure on the body. It's closer in than the ribs, it's closer in than the hips. When that happens, then you're doing the, if you do the finger test, you slide two fingers between the body and the harness, you should not be able to turn them easily. If you do it the way I just described, that will come about. And there is webbing. We'll demonstrate about using webbing. The how to tie a seat harness on 67, 68. Don't bother with it. If you want to try tying a seat harness, I'd be more than happy to help you. But I got to tell you, they are got to be one of the most uncomfortable things.
Yeah, I've used them. We used to tie them in the Marines. For the price of even a good, sturdy commercial one, it's well worth the money just to get your own harness if you want to have your own harness.
Yep.
You see, harnesses are what I used 100 years ago. They were keep them flat, no doubt, no twisting.
On 69, we talk about helmets. We've got a variety of different helmets. The only difference between them really is the adjustment. Now, on 69, notice that where it calls about nape straps, right about where they are in the back of the head is where the adjustment needs to be. You want that adjustment right below that little bump in the back of your head or the back of the head of the participant. You want it a little tighten it where it feels a little uncomfortable, then back it off just a notch, and it'll be fine. We want to make sure that when the participant's wearing the helmet, that if they shake their head or nod their head, the helmet moves with the head. It doesn't flop. Because if there is enough flopping, there's a possibility that as they're climbing, they're looking up, that helmet will start to work back, and now we have the danger of that strap coming right around their throat. Carabiners. The carabiners we have on our out in the COPE course are very heavy. If you picked up a couple of them, you'll go, gee, these seem to be a lot heavier than we had at the climbing gym. And yes, they are. They're made of steel. And they're designed to hold at least 5 kilonewtons, 5,000 pounds of stress pressure. They're made of steel because if you take an aluminum carabiner, hook it over the wires that we've got on our high elements, put pressure on it and slide it, it will slice it in half, just like a knife through butter. Steel cables require steel materials on them. Pulley, sheaves, so forth, it's got to all be steel. You put anything less than steel on it, that cable will eat it up. Also, we use locking carabiners. We have some that are auto-locking, like on the mobile climbing tower. They're spring-loaded, so as soon as you let go, they're automatically locking. Generally, on our COPE course, we all use just screw gate carabiners. You hook it in, you position it so that as you screw it, it's going in a down position. We want to remember we screw it down so we don't screw up. We screw it down until it stops, then back it off about a quarter of a turn. And we check continually. On 70, where it talks about non-locking carabiners, bent gate carabiners, etc., just ignore that. We're not going to ever use those on a COPE course on any sort of life system. Anchors, there's only a couple different type of anchors we use. There's a reduction, shear reduction tube at the pamper pole. It's a stainless steel tube that the rope goes through. And we have shear reduction devices, SRDs, which look like pulleys, but they don't move. And we have those on the other elements. Cable ascenders, zipline tethers, those are all going to be very special use. Lanyards, we're going to be using those a lot. Basically, it's a piece of cordage or webbing that can hold many times your weight and of a length that is designed to keep you from falling that more than that 2 feet distance. On 72, where we talk about self-belayed climbing, those are when you have to do a gear rescue or you have to get on top of the element because of something's gone wrong. The rope has not passed through. I mean, the pull cable or the rope have come apart. So now somebody's got to go restring that. Sometimes people do that just for grins because it's kind of fun to climb up that 30-foot pole, tether yourself in, and walk out on this beam where it's just you hanging from this wire. On 72, friction devices. Look at page 73. We do not have a slotted plate, so ignore that. Tubular devices, those are the types that we will use. They're very simple. They're very sound. They wear like iron. Well, they wear like steel because they're steel. And we've got a couple different types. The figure eight descenders, if you were down at Goshen, you would see those. We've got some there. We also have some other descenders that have ears on them. They're fun for rappelling. We generally don't do rappelling out at Camp Snyder because none of the sites, none of the elements are designed to support rappelling. On the bottom of page 73, you'll notice this thing that looks like a pole stuck in the ground. And what it's there to demonstrate is there's three holes drilled at angles into it. We have an element at both courses, the pamper pole, otherwise known as the confidence pole, that the just right descender would be perfect for, but we haven't installed them. If you're at another COPE course and you see these poles sitting on the side, that's what they're there for. They're a non-movable belay. They do the same thing as if you look at that tubular device. A person hooked into that tubular device that weighs a couple tons would be the same as a just right descender. The material that's on page 74 and on, the important part
hey,
is...
Tony?
Yeah, Larry?
So the just right descender is still manned by a belayer.
Thank you. Yeah, if you're looking at page 73, you see a rope going up. That would be going to the climber, and the rope that's going down towards the ground, that would have someone's hand on it.
Good. That's what I was asking.
But really, all they have to do is just push it towards the pole. I mean, put a bit of an angle on it, and it immediately adds pressure, adds friction.
Okay.
The reason the reason it's best for the confidence pole is... The confidence pole, you climb up a 20-foot pole, turn around, and then jump off. And that's the only element that we use a dynamic rope for, because there's going to be a jolt. If you're the belayer and you're not ready for this, you're going to have a tendency to put that on full brake. And if you do, that person who just jumped off is going to have a rather rude shock. The challenge is to snub their fall just a bit so they're not jolted, but they're not coming down at speed. Now, if that sounds complicated, it was intended to be. But you guys can figure it out. It just takes a little bit of practice. And I'd be happy to have you belay, and I'll jump off. Any questions about belay devices? Okay. 74, rope. The rope we use on the course, the rope that's going to have your life in its strands, is all Kern mantle. It's got two parts. It's got an interior part of strands that make up bundles of strands that make up the Kern. If it's dynamic rope, they will be twisted ever so slightly, kind of like the rifling of a rifle barrel. If it's a static rope, those strands are all straight. So there's very, very little stretch to them. And the purpose of the mantle is to protect those inner strands from getting dirty, getting broken, and getting twisted. Generally, most of the ropes we've got are 11 millimeter. So they're 7/16 of an inch. Half inch is 12 millimeters, and they get pretty bulky. So 11 millimeter is about the biggest that will be able to go through our belay devices. We have some ropes that are in the 10 millimeter range, and they're much more flexible. They're easier to use, but if you have a heavy body that you're trying to belay, you're going to have to put a great deal more pressure on the belay device to get them to act appropriately. So generally 11 millimeters of ropes that we use. on page 75, it goes into details about the parameters of the ropes, the strength that it has to have. The part about purchasing new rope, that is a bit more complicated than really is necessary. To be honest, I don't remember ever seeing a rope that is described in number of inches in diameter. Like, it's all in millimeters. And for the most part, the ropes that we use are all intended to be single ropes, not used in tandem with anything. And one of the things that we definitely will need to do when we get out in the course is learn how to inspect a rope. So we inspect a rope before we use it. We inspect a rope when we're putting it away. And each rope that is going to be part of a life safety system has a history that's logged. And we've got a book of logs for our ropes in the COPE room. There's a plastic bin that's got the records in it. And that's where the binder is. And two other forms of material that are authorized to be on the course are webbing and accessory cord. Accessory cords are great for making prussics or arresting knots. We'll go into greater detail about where those are appropriate when we talk about the Level 2 program. I mean, one of the cool things about Level 2 is we're going to talk about pulley systems and prussic knots with pulleys and carabiners. It's amazing what you can do with those. But webbing, we use webbing on our course for tethers on the zip line, or when we have to do gear rescues, when we have to climb up and then stay tethered to the top of a device or top of an element. The other place where we use webbing is on handholds for ropes when we run the flying squirrel. Those are all things that we'll have to show you. The last piece that I want to go over, besides knots, I got to be honest, that section in the belay manual where it talks about knots, please don't look at that. There's sites that have animated knots. Please look at those. And please get familiar with that list of knots that we need to know how to tie. The figure eight follow through, figure eight on a bite, double fisherman's knot, a barrel knot, clove hitch. Definitely know those. Those optional ones, very handy occasionally. By the way, if you have difficulty tying a knot, what I'd suggest doing is close your eyes and imagine what you're doing while you're tying it. Okay, and one other thing to remember about a knot is after we've tied a knot that we're going to use for climbing, we usually tie a stopper knot or a safety knot. Excuse me. What I would like you to do is on page 85, put a big mark around the method that talks about chop method for belaying. What we're going to be doing should not require any other method. And so our council policy, which is my policy, is when we're on the COPE course, we use the CHOP method. Why this? Because it makes sure that both hands are always on the break end of the rope. Okay? There used to be a picture of a belay team. It talks about backup belayer. I'll have to get you some images of that. Because a belay the blader who's got the blade device has got the hands on the brake rope, and they have a person connected to them adding weight. Because if the person starts to fall, the blader is not going to be pulled off the ground. They're going to be pulled underneath that climber. So the purpose of the anchoring person is to hold them back. And then we also want to have a butt blader, a person who's taking the excess rope up. They're watching the blader's hand. In the event the blader loses control of the rope, the butt blader then holds onto the rope and sits down. And that'll put enough pressure on it to completely lock the system. Final part I want to go over is belay signals on page 86. Climber is getting ready to climb. After they've checked, they've gone through the check system. Remember, clothing, helmets, harnesses, environment, connections, knots. And then when they're preparing to climb, they ask, on belay? And the belayer then gives them a snuggie, tightens that rope up, takes all the slack out. And once they've taken all the slack out, then they say, belay on, because now the belay is on. Then the climber says, climbing. And before they start to climb, the belayer responds with, climb on, because now we've got another opportunity for the belayer to detect if something's not ready to put the climber's life in danger. And some of the other commands. Most of these commands are for the climbing person, I mean for the climbing community, except slack. We have some elements where you're going to be like the centipede and the giant's ladder. The climber will get to the top, and in order to stand up, they need a bit of slack. So the belayer has to get out, give them out some slack. But then as they stand up, that belayer's got to pull that slack out as fast as possible. Not so fast that it pulls them over, but definitely. Because if they're standing up and they slip, that's a dangerous position to be in. And by the way, when I say dangerous, it's like you're sitting on the floor, you're standing up, and you lose your balance, and you fall back to the floor. It's only that far. You're not coming down to the ground when you follow the standards and procedures.
And Tony, while it's true you're not coming down to the ground, you're also not falling to a flat surface. You don't, depending on what you're climbing, it is more dangerous than simply falling to the ground.
Yes. It is. You're when you're aloft, you're coming down onto a round pole and slipping, hitting the pole, slipping off of it. It's very uncomfortable. You're not very, very likely, not likely to break any bones or even sprain anything, but you would get a bump.
I guess I shouldn't say more dangerous. It is scarier.
Oh, granted, absolutely. 100% with you there, Larry. It is definitely scarier. But, like, walking up a staircase, losing your balance, you're going to get probably more hurt coming down those stairs than you would on a cope course where you're 30 feet off the ground.
Agreed. Because the limited fall because of the belay prevents you from falling the same distance that you would be rolling down a stairs.
Right. Absolutely. That's the point I was trying to make. So those are the points I wanted to get across. Next week, we're going to be talking about equipment control and inventory, as well as operating high elements. And get you ready for when we're out in the course, setting those up, participating on them, and packing them up so they're secured. Any questions, comments, concerns?
None from here.
Thank you, Brad.
I'm good. Thank you, Tony.
You're welcome. How about a group out in Maryland? How are you guys doing?
We good?
We are good.
Okay. Now, hopefully, I do want to put in a pitch. Please let me know if you can be out on the course the weekend in May on the 19th, because I need to give the training plan evaluator an idea of how many people she will need to observe. And also, I need to know how many people that we need to be feeding, because
I'm planning on it. I've got it listed.
I will.
Tony, this is Larry. I'm planning on being there. Unless something happens, I am planning on being there.
Excellent. Thank you. I will be out. I plan to be out there Friday night to make sure the cabin is all set up. So anybody that wants to come out in the evening, be more than welcome to. The training plan evaluator who's asked about our schedule is going to be coming from, I think she'll be coming from Pennsylvania, but she's now operating a camp somewhere off the Chesapeake Bay. She is an exceptional person. She'd be a great person for you all to meet. She's been doing this for years. She also facilitates adult programs. So I wanted to pick her brain, and if you're there helping me pick her brain, I'd greatly appreciate it. See you Thursday.
All right. Thank you, Tony.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tony.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And send me an email
Thank
that
you,
you were
Tony.
here.